a good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, he need cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kutagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade, and we discuss local and national Native news and events. And as you know, Wendy, do you know this?
I do.
What do you know?
I know.
All
Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. This portion of the show is brought to you by Alliant Energy, powering beyond.
Yeah, we had a great interview with Griselda last night with Alliant Energy, and I was in Madison, and I was doing some work for The Nation, talking to the other side of the table about some certain bills that may affect Native Americans in Wisconsin, so it was really... interesting to talk to Republican senators.
Yeah, you're good at that.
Yeah, I try to meet them where they're at, and one of them had like it could have filled up a sports bar. You think I have a lot of
sports paraphernalia?
Yeah,
really.
It could have filled.
I'm sure it was neat and organized and displayed in a very nice way.
No.
Okay.
But anyways, it was really interesting, and. There was another person that did radio at one time, and there was another one of the senators who had kind of a iconic football pitcher up there that I was able to speak about and to break the ice.
That's good.
They were worried we were going to be circling the Capitol and protesting. They were a little concerned, but we...
It's kind of like a mini insurrection.
No. No, it was just a how are you doing and why are you doing, you know, kind of deal. But... I'm glad to be here. I'm glad everything's working. And it's always a little awkward not having you across the table, Wendy.
It is hard. Yeah, we had some technical difficulties yesterday, and it was a little bit of a miff.
And then we took care of some of it, and then I blew it here in the beginning of the show. So, you know, the man behind the curtain don't know what he's doing. I don't know. Well, hey, before we get too deep into this, why don't we get to Ogama with the news and get back to reality here. Welcome, Ogama.
Hi, Anim Bujou, everybody. I'm Ogama Ganuikwe. I am a member of the Red Lake Nation in northern Minnesota. And as always, I like to start the news here with a little bit of information on what's happening with the Line 3 movement here in Minnesota. Some big events coming up to get you involved with this ongoing tragedy in Minnesota. For the beginning of the year, tomorrow at 11 a.m. in downtown St. Paul at the DNR / MPCA or Minnesota Pollution Control Office building, there is going to be a demonstration as part of Honor the Earth, the Minnesota Environmental Partnership, and RISE Coalition, as well as others. They're calling all water protectors for a Fix the Aquifer, Fix the Process dancing and press conference. So if you don't know, about 1 year ago, just about 1 year ago, on January 21st, 2021, Enbridge Energy punctured an artesian aquifer in Clearbrook, Minnesota, after intentionally deviating from their plan and construction permit without notifying the DNR, and they dug their trench that was supposed to be 8 to 10 feet down to a depth of 18 feet, and then further put in about, I believe, 28 feet of pipe in there. So they punctured this aquifer, and then they failed to report it to the Minnesota DNR, the MPCA, for I think it was June before it was reported to the Minnesota DNR, but more on that later. Anyway, so Enbridge is not being held accountable for their actions. They did face a small fine of $3.3 million, which is not very much when we're talking about these mega corporations like Enbridge Energy. Meanwhile, there's about 1,000 water protectors facing criminal charges here in Minnesota. So if you would like to get involved and you're in the Twin Cities, you're going to want to show up at 536 Lafayette Road in St. Paul, which is the DNR and MPCA building. Dress warm and wear a natural shade of blue if possible. Bring a whistle or a kazoo. They would like everybody to blow the whistle on the agency's inability to keep Minnesota safe. Bring signs if you have them, but many will be available. There will be public parking a block west of the DNR building near Grove Street in St. Paul. But definitely check out Honor the Earth, Rise Coalition, and more to make sure to get all the details for the event. That is tomorrow at 11 a.m. at 536 Lafayette Road in St. Paul. If you're in northern Minnesota, there's going to be a commemorative gathering at the Clearbrook site where Enbridge breached the terminal from 1 to 2:30 p.m. That one is led by Rise Coalition, and there's going to be wonderful speakers there, as well as the new bass song will be sung. All of those things are happening there. A lot of holding space and praying, and again asking for accountability from the Minnesota DNR and MPCA as they approve, as they have not done anything about the permits that were willfully violated by Enbridge. Other events that are happening today, 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. If you are in Wisconsin, what's happened with Line 3 here in Minnesota could happen on Line 5, the south shore of Lake Superior and Line 5, and the impacts of what that looks like on the lands and waters is an event that's happening today online from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Shutdown Line 5-Protect the Water on Facebook. It is an hour and a half online event. The registration is on the event page, and I believe we have shared it on Native Roots Radio. Next Thursday, January 20th, 7 to 8:30 p.m., you can learn the basics about the Stop Line 5 movement and how to testify at the upcoming Wisconsin DNR hearing about it on February 2nd. So that is, again, on Shutdown Line 5, Protect the Water. I just want to give an update here, too. The Minnesota Reformer reported that Enbridge Energy has actually claimed that they have stopped the flow of water from the aquifer in Clearbrook. They reported that on Tuesday. So the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources spokesperson, as well as Enbridge, has told the Minnesota Reformer that they have managed to get the water to stop flowing from that aquifer. I believe the information I got from a webinar earlier today sounds like they poured a bunch of concrete into it. So I'm not really sure that's an effective way to fix it. But I guess that's how one company would go about fixing these things. I'm not really sure. So DNR was fined again $3.3 million in September and ordered to repair the puncture. They missed the deadline and agreed to pay the fine. But what's happening now is that Enbridge could still face some criminal charges. It's been referred to the Minnesota the Attorney General of Minnesota for Enbridge, whether or not they're going to be receiving any sort of fines. But again, there's thousands of water protectors in Minnesota, almost 1,000 water protectors in Minnesota facing criminal charges. So the numbers on the bottom of the screen, if you're watching online, you know, this is your reminder to call the Minnesota Attorney General, Keith Ellison, and to tell them to release the water protectors and drop the charges for them. In more national news, Callie Benally from Indian Country Today pointed out that Cynthia Chavez Lamar has been named the incoming director for the National Museum of the American Indian. This is historic because she's the first Native woman to be a Smithsonian Museum director. Chavez Lamar is a citizen of San Felipe Pueblo Nation and maternal ancestry of Hopi, Tewa, and Navajo, and she will begin on Valentine's Day. And then congratulations to Abby Roque, who is Ojibwe of the Wanapate First Nation, and she's the first Indigenous woman to play for the U.S. Women's National Olympic Team for hockey, which is fantastic.
Absolutely. Wow. Thanks, Ogama. You know, it's hard to hear that. We have 1,000 people that are protecting everybody's water being arrested, and yet we don't...
It's the cement. It sounds like if they're trying to cover something up, if you ask me. That's crazy. Cement.
I see what you did there. Hey, we have Robert Lilligren up next. And it's good to be back. You sounded crystal clear, Ogama, and we'll be right back after this short break, Wendy.
Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Anna, and I'm 8 years old, and I'm getting my COVID vaccine. If you're between 5 and 11 years old, you can get vaccinated too. Getting the jab might seem a little scary, but there is lots of good reasons to do it. You'll be protected from COVID, and you'll be less likely to spread it to people like family and friends. Have your parents find a vaccination site by calling 651-304-9986 or visit vaccineconnector.mn.gov.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
We are your relatives.
We are your relations.
Brothers.
Sisters.
Sons.
Daughters.
And some of us are your grandchildren.
We are your community. Historically, we held places of honor and respect. Because of the impact of colonization, some of us are rejected, thrown out from family, friends, and community, set up as targets for sexual violence, sex trafficked, humiliated, tortured, and murdered. Everybody has the right to be safe. We are your relatives. Remember,
homophobia is not traditional.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
January is Cervical Cancer Awareness Month, and American Indian women in Minnesota are twice as likely to develop cervical cancer. Native Roots Radio is partnering with Minnesota's Sage Breast and Cervical Cancer Program to talk about cervical cancer. Watch live Monday, January 24th at 7:30 p.m. on Native Roots Radio's Facebook page. Guests will include public health experts within the American Indian community who will share important information about cervical cancer in our Native communities. Tune in Monday at 7:30 p.m. on Native Roots Radio's Facebook page.
Hi, this is Representative Charisse Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, Wendy, what a great voice I have there. Did you?
I'm not sure whether I like that or not, that intro, how it comes in.
Well, the music sounds better.
Because you're sitting here and your mouth isn't moving.
The music sounds better. So we pre-recorded the intro on there because we do it from the studio. It's a long story, technically. It sounded better, but yeah, it kind of creeped me out, too, because I took a big, deep breath and ready to say something and words came out of my mouth without me even trying. So, hey, what is this portion brought to you by?
This portion of the show is brought to you by MN3, grassroots organization fighting for climate justice.
Well, we have Robert Lilligren with us, and we're always excited to have a conversation. I know.
With somebody who could actually talk.
Right. And complete sentences, you know, those kind of things. Yeah. Complete sentences are good, too, because poor Wendy, her job's not only to be my sidekick and co-host, but to figure out and decipher what I'm trying to say over the radio and finish my sentences. It's working really well. It's our fifth year, but bless you, Wendy. And Robert, always great to see you. I know we joke around that we had some prep over the times, and I think it works really great what we do. We kind of free flow, and I really don't know what to ask you today, so it's all yours. Yeah. No, just kidding. Welcome.
Yeah, bonjour, Robert. Wendy Ogama, great to be here. Thanks.
Well, you know, one of the things...
Very spontaneous these days. Very spontaneous.
And I think it works. And one of the things that is obvious to me, and when you come on, it really it makes me think about this, too, is that our relatives that are outside in this weather. And, you know, the weather... We're here and complaining that our toes are cold in a warm house, and I can't imagine, and we pray for our relatives.
Right. I always do. My heart goes out to our relatives living outdoors in these sub-zero temperatures, and also just prayers and support to those who are helping our relatives, right? The people doing outreach, people bringing services, the people trying to get them indoors where it's warm.
Yeah, you know, that's, you know, hard to imagine doing that job and taking that home with you, too. And I know where you work, you see a lot of our relatives that are out, and it's just hard to not take that home with you.
Right. Well, and I get to see them, but I'm not out there doing the work. But I do get to come into contact with a lot of the folks doing outreach, our Native relatives doing outreach to the Native folks, our Native relatives sleeping outside. And you can tell, you know, I worry about them. And it's a lot. It's a lot of trauma to absorb, a lot to take home. And I follow a lot of folks on Facebook that are doing the work. And I'm really impressed when they reach out and say, okay, I'm having a rough period. I need a little support from folks. You know, can you give me some encouragement? So it's tough.
Yeah, it's tough all over with and especially it just comes really straight to home when it's this cold. I mean,
when it's this cold. And just this last week, there was a big effort to clear one of the camps. For folks familiar with South Minneapolis, it was at 26 in Bloomington, right in kind of the heart of the Native community. It was, you know, in a lot of ways considered a Native camp, although of course not everybody there was Native. And it's hard, right? You gotta kind of balance the desire to help folks, the desire to support people who are looking for help themselves, the desire to respect people's choices, and the knowledge that you're going to freeze to death if you don't get inside before this cold weather.
Hey, you know, we're here with Robert Lilligren, the CEO of Native American Community Development Institute, and I don't think I introduced you properly because I was in my own world there again, but I was in Madison, and I don't want to get too deep about my other job, but you know what I do, and I had to speak with a few Wisconsin Republican senators yesterday, and we're in an upside-down world. I don't know if it was that bad when you were in politics, but the realities of some people are just mind-blowing. I mean, if you tell me something's white, I'm going to tell you it's black and that the people think that it's white are totally wrong. And I mean, it's just, you sit there in awe. And it was kind of fun, too, because I'm in a Native organization. I don't really want to get into that, but they were afraid to see me. They didn't know why we were there, but it was really interesting. And
the Republican legislators were afraid to see us.
Senators, we had a meeting with four of them about a certain bill that they were proposing that might affect Act 31, which is, you know, to teach education, Native education in Wisconsin schools. So it was really interesting, Robert. And I don't know if it's gotten worse, or did you have very hard being the first Native city council member? Did you run into a lot of that when you first started, or is this a really new wave of reality?
Yeah, you know, I didn't have that much to do with Republicans in the role when I was on Minneapolis City Council. We're a very progressive city. We were all either Democrats or Greens while I was on the city council. So in my day-to-day work, I didn't have to face what you were talking about, but at times we had to deal with the legislator or deal with other parts of the Twin Cities region. And then hit a lot of that, what you're talking about, that dynamic. And, you know, really, I think that dynamic has been there since the first Europeans settled, you know, stepped onto the Turtle Island here, you know, so we've been working against that. But I know what you mean. It does seem more intensified. Here in the Twin Cities, we have this initiative called the Urban Indian Legacy Initiative. And Dr. Joe Hobart at the American Indian OIC is leading the effort, but to bring more public sector, private sector, corporate capital dollars into the urban Indian community here. So there's a lot of reaching across the aisle now and bumping into the dynamics that you're talking about. Some people don't even want to talk to Native folks. You know, you're not my constituents. I don't want to talk to you. But I will say this, Robert, and since you brought it up, there's also a lot of interesting comments or pushback coming from our friends on our side of the aisle. You know, and I think what it goes back to is just raising awareness, education. You know, people can say some things that are kind of uninformed or even a lot ignorant, maybe. And so we get the opportunity to educate them about our community.
Yeah, and I think that's all we were doing in Madison. But yeah, that's a good place to be in a non-confrontational setting,
right.
You know, and be able to say, we're not here to really, you know, rattle your cage. We just want you to look at this. It could affect this. And they weren't aware. And it was good. But you could tell they were pretty happy. It wasn't like, what the heck are you doing, you know?
Right, or that you weren't yelling at them or something.
Right.
You know, right. Yeah. The, you know, an effort we're doing here, this Urban Indian Legacy Initiative, we're united, right? We're working collaboratively. Mm-hmm. We're working as Native organizations across the metro area together, all supporting each other's work. We've prioritized, you know, our capital needs and put a dollar amount on them. But already, even our friends in the legislature, they're trying to sort of pick projects mm-hmm. off, or in some ways, maybe even unintentionally, sort of dividing mm-hmm. our unity. And it's like, no, these are, you know, we're all equally supporting each other. Of course, our own organizations we want to advocate for, mm-hmm. but it's very important to us here to show that kind of unity to the outside world.
Yeah, you know, and I'm glad to hear you say that, and I think your intentions have always been that, but I think maybe some of the perception from our Native relatives haven't been that way, but it's been a real big victory the last time the legislative bills that were passed for a lot of Natives and organizations, and you guys were always speaking in this past year about, you know, spreading that out to everyone.
Right, right. And that together with the urban communities, working with the tribal communities, we're stronger, right? We got to shed this idea, this mentality of scarcity, that there aren't enough resources. There are enough resources there, right. That we got to make sure they're coming to our people and to our communities, whether that's urban, tribal, and together we can be stronger.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad you have an opportunity to voice that, because that really is exciting, and that is what's going on. And, you know, we're happy here to amplify that. I you know, we got to take off here in a minute. Can you hold on for another segment?
And sure, if you like. Happy to.
That's awesome. I'd like to, and then I have to make a note that I'd like to talk about this, but we're relatively the same age, and I want to kind of talk about something I brought up in the beginning, and that's the realities. I remember when the first Bush was bombing and how excited everybody was about that. And then as a young person like we were during the Vietnam War, seeing it in the news every day, and it was really unbelievable to see, I guess, the patriotism that was going on during that, where over 400,000 people were basically murdered and bombed. And just talk about maybe perception in media the next segment, if you don't mind.
Sure.
And I'll make a note to make sure that we do talk about that, because, you know, I have a good memory, but it's short. Cool. Hey, we're here with Robert Lilligren, Native American Community Development Institute, and we're going to be right back after this short break. Wendy,
stay with us.
Hey, Wendy, what are we doing for dinner after the show?
How about we go to J. Selby's on 169 Victoria Street in St. Paul? They have a delicious plant-based menu that's compassionate and environmentally sustainable.
I'm getting their spot-on vegan Big Mac, the dirty secret.
You can pick up and they deliver within a five-mile radius, or you can call them at 651-222-3263 or visit jselbys.com.
Well, you sold me one. Let's go order at J. Selby's tonight.
I'm hungry.
Ugh, things are feeling so empty and lonely. I wish I could still see my friends.
Oh, hi, Mark. How have you been?
I don't know, dude. Things have just been, I don't know, actually. It's been many different things. I've mostly just felt alone.
Yeah, I know that feeling all too well, man. But things are starting to look up.
Huh? Oh, yeah, how so?
Well, they're coming out with new vaccines. We could finally see our friends again.
Yeah, I've heard of those, but I just don't know where to get them.
Well, you can get them at a vaccination clinic.
This message is brought to you by McGeezy Communications and Minnesota Department of Health.
J&S Bean Factory is a native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Bougie relatives, my name is Deanna Sandycloud. I'm from the Red Lake Nation, and I live in Minneapolis today. As the weather gets colder, you're probably going to spend more time indoors, but it's important to stay safe and healthy. The COVID-19 pandemic is still not over, and now the flu season is upon us. So protect you and your loved ones by getting vaccinated against both the flu and COVID-19. COVID booster shots have now been approved for Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson. And you're eligible if you're over 65 and if you're over 18 and have underlying health conditions or work in a high-risk setting. What's cool is your booster shot does not need to be of the same brand as your original series of shots. And you can receive a booster shot of any brand that's available to you. Children over the age of 5 are now eligible for a vaccine as well. So let's protect our relatives in Indian Country this winter and get vaccinated. Be a vaccinative like me. Find a vaccination site by calling 651-304-9986 or visit vaccineconnector.mn.gov. Miigwech Bizindawien.
January is Cervical Cancer Awareness Month, and American Indian women in Minnesota are twice as likely to develop cervical cancer. Native Roots Radio is partnering with Minnesota's Sage Breast and Cervical Cancer Program to talk about cervical cancer. Watch live Monday, January 24th at 7:30 p.m. on Native Roots Radio's Facebook page. Guests will include public health experts within the American Indian community who will share information about cervical cancer in our Native communities. Tune in Monday at 7:30 p.m. on Native Roots Radio's Facebook page.
Hey Minnesota, it's Brad Friedman, host of The Bradcast. We'll expose and make sense of all of our current political nightmares and more every weeknight at 7 on AM 950.
This is Angela Warner for Warner Stallion, and while I'm always proud of the work we do in our community, I'm especially proud this month of our partnership with Make-A-Wish. With your help, we are donating $50 for each qualifying appliance purchased to Make-A-Wish. Together, we could donate up to $100,000 to grant wishes for Minnesota kids. So I invite you to do good for your family while helping kids' wishes come true during Warner Stallion's Great Give Back. Now through January 24th, in-store or online at warnerstallion.com.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Patrick Lulia. Clear tonight and very cold with a low of 12 below. Wind chills could get down to 27 below. Then on Friday, sunshine and a high of 17 above. Next Chapter Booksellers has the hottest titles to get you through these frigid winter nights. Next Chapter Booksellers, Snelling and Grand in St. Paul. More at nextchapterbooksellers.com.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
Yes, that is Robert Pilot. What a great voice he has. Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio, Wendy.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, we're here with Robert Lilligren, who is the CEO of Native American Community Development Institute here in the Twin Cities, Minnesota. And we're talking all over Turtle Island. And I miss our talks, Robert, when we used to talk when we were pre-recorded and we talked before we would record. And one of the things that I kind of ended this segment of is when the first Iraq war happened with George Bush won, and I couldn't believe, because we grew up where 10 Americans were killed and 20 Viet Cong were killed and we're winning the war kind of thing. And we lived through the protest, the colleges were really ramping up. And then just 20 years short later, the whole perception under the guise of let's be nice to the troops, which I agree with, turned into a real big patriotic song and dance.
Right. Yeah, that was an interesting time. And just listening to you do that, you know, start talk about that, I was thinking, I was really flashing back to like the 60s, 70s, and the Vietnam era. And, you know, we were kids. I don't know, I had older siblings. My sister, I ran across this thing recently online where my sister was interviewed as part of an archive of the Vietnam era, you know, and activism and stuff like that, and just to read what she did and stuff. And I think what you said is really important, Robert. That's, you know, it's, we all want to support the troops, right? We want to really respect men and women who are willing to put their lives on the line. And it doesn't mean that we have to support war.
Right.
And, you know, the killing of civilians, women, and children.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know, for me, because I thought I paid attention, but I don't know for me if it was like the media slant or just the times, because, you know, that was like towards the end of Greed is Good and all that other, all those other Wall Street movies, and all the country was changing, but I felt like I wasn't changing and I was just maturing into my thoughts and the country changed around me. I don't know. It was weird.
Yeah, it was weird. You know, you're really making me flash back to those days. And I think, you know, I lived, and I'm guessing you were very similar at the time in this, you know, very particular community. You know, I was surrounded by people who thought like me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, so to me, my positions, my beliefs made a lot of sense and were really supported. I wasn't in that broader sort of culture in the country that was more pro-war.
Yeah, and I don't know if I just assumed people agreed with me, because I don't know. It was I was very surprised the way the country reacted at that time. And so now we fast forward to where we're at now, and with all these different media outlets, whether you call YouTube or even Fox News outlet, a news outlet, it's just an upside-down world. It's just, and I don't know if it's always been that way and everyone's feels more comfortable about talking politics, because I remember us as kids, you never talk politics and how much money you made and all those things. And I do it all the time now, but,
that's because you have such an impressive income, Robert. You want to get older and talk about it. But I would say this, you know, the big difference is we didn't have the internet back in the early 1990s, right? So the information we were getting, the news we were getting, was very curated and controlled for us. And of course, we had alternative outlets, but it wasn't like you just tapped a few keys and you had all this information. You had to seek it or subscribe to alternative media sources. And so now it's everybody can say anything at any time and everybody else has access to it.
Yeah, my prescription or subscription, I mean, to High Times in the day probably was not the best place to read stuff, but I had some cool articles about American Indian movement, I'll tell you that.
Sure, I bet. I think my favorite subscription from back in the day was the Coevolution Quarterly. Very brainy stuff, man. Brainy stuff.
Yeah, I know. I thought you were going to say Mad Magazine, because that was my second.
Well, that too.
But yeah, so I don't know. Is it as bad, or is things as bad, or am I just more keyed in? Because, you know, the media has always been owned by rich people. So, I mean, right. When they say liberal media, I don't always know what they mean by that.
I agree with that liberal media name. In my experience, at least mainstream media isn't particularly liberal. Even before the internet, and I think that people's feelings are probably, or what's going on inside people is probably pretty similar today as it was 30, 40 years ago. But I think the fact that we can broadcast that outward, and then, you know, ideas that maybe 30, 40 years ago would never gain traction suddenly feel more mainstream, you know, I think with the insurrection of a year ago that we're still talking about, things like that. I'm guessing those would have had a much harder time gaining traction and followers before the internet.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when the president before this president was elected, I remember a hat that came out that I really wanted to buy, and it said, "Make racists afraid again." And I think maybe some of that was happening back in the day because, you know, we also grew up to TV shows or with three networks and TV shows like All in the Family that made really Archie Bunker seem ridiculous. But there was people would always say, "Hey, he's just like my uncle," or "He just reminds me of my father." And it was
right.
Like,
oh, my mom used to say, "Oh, that's my dad. Archie Bunker is my dad," you know. But I think that's it, right? Just in the most recent history, through the last president's term and things, it wasn't just that these ideas were voiced, but that they got to be sort of into the mainstream, right? Yeah. They were supported by powerful establishment people, and suddenly what really had been in kind of the shadows and the margins of our country suddenly were front and center, and people felt that they had probably undue legitimacy. Now we have to.
Yeah. Well, and there's also a balance too. Like I always joke around that I watch TikTok, but there's a native presence on TikTok that's unbelievable and educational. It really surprises me now that sure. TikTok's up to 3 minutes a time, and there's people out there doing really good work, and I'm watching, and hopefully allies are being educated because there's some rich history that's been recently, you know, swept under the rug that's coming out too, whether it's, you know, the 60s with AIM and the 70s or just, you know, John Trudell or just what you guys have right. done
boarding
to
schools,
Franklin Avenue.
Schools.
Oh, the boarding yeah. schools are really coming out. But the right. positive stuff like what you guys yep. have done to Franklin Avenue. And I remember being afraid to drive down Franklin Avenue as a youngster.
Yeah, it's very different now, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
it's wonderful. And well, and you just talk about things going on right now, Robert, and it just makes you, I got asked this week, I was very honored to be asked to be part of an effort that's gathering sort of national data on Native people, contemporary Native people, how they view themselves, how they, you know, what priorities are. It's called the Indigenous Futures Survey. And Native folks can take it at indigenousfuturesurvey.org or just Google Indigenous Futures Survey. And I got invited to be on the National Advisory Board of what to do with this data. But it's a great survey. This is the second iteration. I took one early last year. And but this is a way that folks can contribute to kind of setting priorities, sort of what we as both urban and tribal people can kind of gather around, set strategies, put resources towards. I'd really urge folks to Google Indigenous Futures Survey or indigenousfuturesurvey.org and take the survey. It takes about 20 minutes. It's really cool, really cool.
That's really cool to hear that you're involved with that because a constituent of mine brought that up in two area meetings and that you immediately get the, I think it's immediately you get the update on the survey sent to you and that there was not enough males the first round, I think something like that, that did the survey. So we should probably start really talking about that to our Native relatives about taking that because it's important to, because we have such a diverse group, urban, you know, we have a lot of our relatives still on the res, so to speak, and living right. with each other, and we're all spread out. But and we have, you know, it's different than 50 years ago. We have, you know, lawyers, doctors, that it's a normal occurrence as opposed to abnormal, I guess.
Right, right. Well, it goes back to that asset-based approach that you were talking about. You know, there's a lot of good stuff going on. And so how do we kind of co-join those efforts, you know, in our regions and in the nation to really make some progress and then set these priorities, especially as we go into the midterm elections, right? There's going to be a huge election, mm-hmm. all kinds of voter suppression efforts, the curtailing of voting rights. I mean, this is going to be a big deal this year. And so this can help us speak with one voice about what our priorities are through the elections.
Yeah, well, here at Native Roots Radio, we're revving up for the next 300 days. That is for sure, because, you know, we have to encourage our relatives and everybody, our allies and everyone, that there now is no such thing as a midterm election. They're all important, and we really need to rock the vote Native style again, you know, and again and again and again. And I think that's something that I would really like to bark out, that I learned from Uncle Clyde, is he called it, you know, a different kind of politics, but I'm going to call it a, you know, keep on doing it over and over again. More of a, boy, help me out here, Wendy. Put that sign down and help me out here. But more, you know, consistent, you know, let's keep doing it over and over again, you know.
Rinse and repeat, right? And
exactly.
And it's going to be a big deal. And we're going to, at our organization, we have Make Voting a Tradition. There's organizations like Native Organizers Alliance, Illuminative. There's a lot of places for folks to tap into, and it's going to take all of us. All of us this year.
Definitely. Well, again, thanks for stopping in. I always, always enjoy our conversation. We're reminiscing. We're the old people now, so we're reminiscing over the radio. Great to see you, Robert. We'll be right back. We'll be right back after this short break.
Stay with us. Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
Navigating COVID while protecting yourself can be difficult. Fortunately, there's a hotline you can call with any questions. The Department of Indian Work St. Paul partnered with the Minnesota Department of Health to open the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline. They provide information on vaccines, booster shots, and testing sites. Right now, booster shots are available to anyone over the age of 18 for those who are eligible. The Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline can also help with housing, food, medical, and educational support. If you or someone you know has questions about COVID-19, vaccinations, booster shots, or testing, please call 651-304-9986. Again, the number is 651-304-9986. The Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline is open for calls Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline at 651-304-9986.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, Wendy.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Howl! It's a pretty famous howl we do every day with your animal segment.
I know. And
our great sponsor, one of our first sponsors ever, Howling
and
for
very
Wolves.
Loyal. They've been with us since day one. Howling for Wolves.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
It's
hey.
It's a great organization. If you want to support a good organization, they are one to do.
Right. Exactly. And they're not only local, but they're nationally getting involved.
Mm-hmm.
And,
they do.
Speaking the truth. And wow, let's not delist our relatives, right?
Exactly. And that's why on every show, I'm going to ask everyone to contact the U.S. Department of the Interior, Secretary Deb Haaland, and you could just call her at 202-208-3100. And we just want everyone to call her or email her, send her a message and ask her to please put the wolves back on the endangered species list. Right now in Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming, they are getting slaughtered.
So let's do that. But I have kind of a funny story here today.
Good segue.
Well, you know, I'm going to mention it every day until she puts her pen to the paper and does it. I mean, she could change it. That's all she has to do, and it's done. So I don't understand why she's not doing it. There's some company, there's some, you know, big conglomerate organization holding her doing something. I don't know what it is. If somebody knows what it is, please contact me and let me know, because I really need to understand it. Rob, one of our loyal listeners, he's listens all the time, sent us a story, and it's from the Bemidji Pioneer, and it was dated January 14th, and it was written by Brad Dokin. And Minnesota DNR verifies cougar sightings on trail camera near Baudette. Yeah, it's kind of a bad picture if you're watching us online here, but that's
white.
Yeah, it looks white. It's a mountain lion and a cougar. So I didn't know this. I looked it up, but a cougar, a puma, cougar, and mountain lions, they're all the same exact animal. They're just called different things in other, you know, different places of the world. I didn't really know that, but anyway. Baudette, Minnesota, living near Beltrami Island State Forest, a few miles southwest of Baudette in Lake of the Woods County, Dennis Topp sees a variety of critters on the trail cameras that he sets on his property, from gray wolves to deers, bobcats, pine martens, and even a lynx he saw both on the camera and in person a few winters back. Top figured he'd seen pretty much every kind of animal of wildlife there is to see in this part of northern Minnesota. That changed in late December when Top checked a trail camera, a mere quarter mile from his house, and came across two images of what could only be a cougar. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources has verified the image as a cougar sighting, with the caveat that it wasn't site verified because the snow had long since covered the tracks. The timestamp on the two cat photos is 6:59 a.m. Tuesday, December 14th, and Top says he didn't check the trail camera until about a week later. Usually, Top says he would hike or ski by the trail camera daily, but he was dog sitting for a friend over the holidays and didn't want to take that pet to the trail in case it ran off or got lost. Quote, when I finally did go and put the card out of the camera, I saw wolf tracks, which is not unusual here, Top said. He's a retired fisheries biologist for the DNR in Baudette. I have a lot of wolves around here, he said. His reaction upon seeing a mountain lion photo was, holy crap. Initially, Top says he wondered if seeing was actually believing, or if perhaps a domestic cat had wandered too close to the camera, giving the illusion it was a big cat. Then a wolf showed up on the same camera trail a couple of days later and put the sighting into clear focus. Quote, then you get a perspective on height and things like that, Top said. It looked like the cat was actually taller than the wolf that came by. They weren't in the exact same position, but I knew it was a bigger cat. Top emailed the photos to Gretchen Melham, manager of Red Lake Wildlife Management Area at Norris Camp, south of Roosevelt, Minnesota. Memhill, intern, forwarded the photos to John Erb, wildlife research scientist for the DNR's Forest Wildlife Populations and Research Group in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. So I think that's pretty cool that those animals are being discovered here in Minnesota and seen in Minnesota. I think that a lot of you know, there's just a lot of people now that have cameras around, you know, there's everything being recorded now. So I think that, you know, we're lucky and we get to see these wildlife that
Do you think, Wendy, is that a lot of their natural resources are being messed with and they're getting closer to us? And
global warming is, and people, you know, this deforestation and things like that. And, you know, there's, you know, Enbridge digging and you know, knocking down trees and habitat is lost. So yes, they're moving in different places trying to find a peaceful place to live, these poor animals. But I have also, you know, Friday, I'm excited. I just want to say this, tomorrow I'm excited because we're going to have Tammy Thies back on the show. And she's the president and CEO at the Wildlife Sanctuary in Sandstone, Minnesota. And she was on last week talking to us about a rescued wild African serval cat that was found in Massachusetts. But the cat was since brought back here to Minnesota to her sanctuary. So she's going to be on tomorrow giving us updates on the serval cat. So I wanted to have some fun facts. So I found 30 clawsome facts about cougars.
So to be clear, that's not Massachusetts, Africa. That's Massachusetts, United States.
Yes, Massachusetts in the United States. Yes, a lot of people are keeping these animals as pets and then they get loose, you know.
How is that still legal?
Or people, it's crazy. We'll talk about that tomorrow.
That'll be your interview.
Cougars are known by 40 different names in English alone. The most popular names for cougars are mountain lions, pumas, or panthers.
Pumas.
So I always thought that a panther was a black panther. It was funny, you know, on Facebook, they have all these little games that you could play and it said, you know, press here to find your spirit animal. Did you play that one, Robert? But
no.
Anyway, I played it because I just do those stupid games. But anyway, my spirit animal came up as a cougar, but the face of the cougar looks like the cougar's saying like, what the heck's going on all the time? Like that's the kind of face of that mountain. Yeah. The main food source for pumas are large mammals such as deer, moose, horses, and sheep. However, they will also hunt small species like insects and rodents. Ogama, I don't know if you have that wonderful picture of my spirit animal there. If you want to pop that up online. I gave it to you. It's funny. You should see it. It depicts my mood most of the time perfectly. So I wonder why Facebook knows me so well. But it does.
Oh, jeez.
Because of their ability... because of their adaptability, they are the most widely distributed earthbound mammal in the Western Hemisphere. Other than humans, no species prey upon fully grown cougars in the wild. Cougars can reach speeds of 45 miles an hour. We'll be back tomorrow with another section of the sacred animal section.
Hey, Pini Gigi, I'd like to end with these thoughts. Mm-hmm. If you're listening to the show, you are part of the resistance. From Chief Plentycoops, the ground on which we stand on is sacred ground. It is the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office. We're still here. We are the seventh generation.
Free Leonard Peltier. Stop line 3. Please get vaccinated.
Pini Gigi, Wendy, Robert Lilligren, and Ogama. We'll be back tomorrow.